I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and inspiration to help you start and manage and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. This is episode 267, and as always, joining us from the headquarters in San Jose, our very own Brian Burke.
I believe it's Studio A.
Yeah, Studio A. Okay. RCA Studio A. We're going to give tours, just like in Nashville.
Some of our listeners have actually been in these Studio A and Studio B, and they could tell everyone it's pretty much just a converted closet.
Yeah, in fact, it's being used as a closet right now.
Studio A is. Studio B is not.
Yeah, that was the old control room back in the day when I was still in San Jose.
Yes, the controller, the wizard behind the screen.
So much has changed in the technology we use since back then.
Yeah. Well, if I think about like this technology that we use now.
Oh, yeah, this is great. We use a program called Riverside. If you're starting a podcast, you should give it a try. You can start out with their free service.
They have a free service?
Yeah, they have a basic service that can work for like a new podcaster who's looking for something to make their life easier.
So even I could do a podcast?
You could.
I don't know what I'd talk about.
Brian, of all the people I know on the face of the planet who have, you always have something to talk about. You're constantly talking.
I am constantly talking.
It's the Irish in you.
It normally means I'm with somebody else.
Yeah, I don't say you talk to yourself.
So I'd have to have someone else in my podcast world.
Yeah, otherwise it would be boring.
You have guests and you have staff.
Staff? What staff?
eBay staff.
No, I don't.
Sometimes.
Brian, what universe do you live in?
No, that you interview with, like the eBay staff in general.
I see what you're saying.
I didn't mean you individually had staff.
Yeah, because I don't.
No, you don't. You do this all by yourself.
Well, with you.
I'm a little piece of it.
Stephanie Hall helps.
Yeah.
She's on our team and she does some of the scheduling and that's helpful. Well,
see, you do have a staff. You just have a virtual staff.
Okay. So I have something. Anyway.
Well, what's on for this week, Griff?
Well, I'm glad you asked because this week we're going to welcome a seller from Brandon, Vermont, a place where I actually used to live. Her name is Janet Modlach, and she's going to share with us how she and her husband took their eBay business on a 3-year road trip across the USA and their RV, and they continued to sell while they were doing this.
3 years.
3 years.
Wow. This is going to be an interesting one.
Oh, yeah. And we have a few questions to answer, of course. One is about revising auction format listings. Another one deals with offers on the My eBay page, specifically someone who doesn't want to see them. And there's another one about sellers who abuse the USPS media mail option for items that aren't allowed by USPS to be sent by media mail. But first, I believe we might have some interesting news this week, Brian.
Well, we do have some news this week, Griff. You know how sellers have been asking, when will eBay expand the categories for eBay standard envelope?
Oh, geez, all too well.
Almost weekly.
Yes.
Well, good news. As of November 1st, 2023, in addition to trading cards, coins and currency, stamps and postcards, the following items are now eligible for eBay standard envelope: patches, stickers and decals, greeting cards, and finally, seeds.
Oh, thank heavens.
And as a reminder, eBay standard envelope includes integrated, limited tracking and shipping protection for items weighing up to 3 ounces and a quarter inch thick. Each shipment includes up to $20 of shipment protection on single item orders and up to $50 on combined orders, all for about $1 in shipping costs. It's a great bargain. For items sent with eBay standard envelope service, we recommend using a plain number 10 envelope. If you need to use a thicker or more rigid envelope to better protect what you're shipping, check with your local post office to ensure your envelope is flexible enough to meet postal guidelines. The shipping team is continuing to explore additional categories for eBay standard envelope, and they will provide updates to the community once more categories are added.
Well, that's very good news. I hear a lot from specifically patches and stickers and decal dealers who have been waiting patiently for this. So the good news is when you go to list in those categories now for either a shipping policy or if you're not using policies for selecting a service, the eBay standard envelope will now appear as a service that you can use. This is all good news. And as they said, there'll be even more categories in the future. And, you know, it's like anything. We have to roll this stuff out. Normally, we can roll at our own pace, but there's somebody else involved, another entity, and that's USPS. And as part of this deal, we promised we wouldn't overload them. we slowly roll things out as we know they're working.
Good news, though.
Good news. Hey, I know you're champing at the bit to hear from her, so let's go visit our guest this week.
I just want to hear how Janet deals with returns.
You're going to find out. Recently, we've talked on the podcast about sellers who've either done it or considered doing it and then maybe didn't do it or did. But we're talking about people who need a little vacation and they're always trying to balance out, how do I keep my business running while I go on vacation? And we have time away. Everyone knows about that. And some people will assign specific duties to a family member or a business partner who stays behind. But what about the long term? What if you decided, for example, that you wanted to go for a long road trip in a camper or RV, but you wanted to keep your business going? I bet you've asked yourself that. And if you haven't, by the end of this segment, we hope that you will, because it's not impossible. And our next guest is here to talk about how she made this happen. Her name is Janet Mondlach. She has a shop in Brandon, Vermont. We seem to know a lot of the same people because we're both Vermonters at heart. And welcome, Janet, to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
We were just having a conversation about, I don't even remember what it was, but you mentioned that you were on the road for 3.5 years?
Yes.
And you kept your business going.
The whole time. Well, the whole time, but there were some gaps. So if we were in a longer stretch of just driving night after night, being in different locations, then we would do an extended handling time, now called time away.
Why did you go on the road? What happened?
We were here in Vermont, my husband Joel and I. We had been selling on eBay for over 20 years, sometimes more, sometimes less, depending on what we were doing in our lives. And we sell antiques and collectibles. And about 2015, 2016, we were at a crossroads in life. We were new empty nesters. We had itchy feet after being in the same place for 30 years. We had had a bricks and mortar antique shop, which we closed. It was also attached to an old-fashioned ice cream parlor soda fountain. And we closed everything, sold what we could. We sold our house. We left town in a snowstorm with a truck full of eBay inventory. At the time, we had about 300 live listings and a number of boxes of things to be listed. And we bought an RV soon thereafter, and we went to live life on the road.
Just like setting out on some sort of odyssey. Did you set out beforehand an itinerary where you wanted to go?
No, because when we left in the snowstorm, we headed towards Arizona, but we ended up actually spending that first winter in Florida.
Like a lot of people do.
Well, Arizona or Florida are the places, and we did not have an itinerary. We did not have a reservation anywhere. We didn't know what we were doing.
Did this work out that way, or did you find out later that you should definitely schedule or plan out a little more?
Well, it depends what kind of person you are. I'm a planner by nature, but there was something very freeing with just, okay, we just sold the house. We're free. What are we going to go do? And we let it happen organically.
You have an RV and it has 300 items stored in it. So I'm assuming that these are rather small things because I don't think you can fit much furniture inside an RV, right?
Yeah, it's a really good point. We're in antiques and collectibles. Some things are larger, some smaller. We brought with us very small things, obviously. So things like postcards, jewelry, advertising tins and paper, small cameras, unframed art, dollhouse miniatures, small dolls, wood carvings. Stay away from breakables. But the other thing, Griff, is that people need to make sure they have room in their rig for their business supplies. You need your laptop, your printer, tape, bubble wrap, boxes, and thank you, eBay, for the coupon, because wherever we were in the country, we used our quarterly coupon and got flattened boxes sent to us.
So you have to make sure that your RV can handle both you and your regular needs plus the business needs. How big was your RV?
Well, we did a 35-foot long travel trailer because this was our only home and we needed a little separation from each other besides room for the business. Yeah. And also it had an outside kitchen and an inside kitchen. So that was good. We got to do our own food stuff away from each other. And then we also had a pickup truck with a cap over it. So that was also a great space to store things because nothing was getting wet. It wasn't open.
You're out on the road and you're making sales, I assume. What do you remember your first sale that you made when you were out in the RV?
We probably... I can't remember. It was in 2016. We probably put the shop, the eBay shop on time away for a couple of weeks while we figured things out. And then we make sales when we're on time away or extended handling. We make sales. So we knew that a certain time was going to come when we needed to hit a post office. And we stopped in Florida and we were in an RV park for a week and then another one for another week. I think we probably shipped from there.
When you list on eBay, you have to provide item location by zip code. How did you handle that? You're no longer in the Vermont zip code. You're now in Florida. Did you have to edit all your listings with a new zip code?
Yeah, it's actually a point for some advice for people because I always said to myself, I always need to know where we are and the zip code we'll be shipping from. And quite frankly, I can't remember what happened then if we were on time away. And maybe we didn't do sales for a couple of weeks, those first couple of weeks.
Sure.
And then as soon as we knew where we were, we opened it up and we put in a zip code where we were. We're here for a week. We put in a zip code. If you sell for a period of time, because we did work camping from the road also.
Work camping, what is that?
Work camping is a combination of work and camping. So we worked a variety of jobs in different places. Typically, we volunteered at places for about 20 hours a week in exchange for our RV spot. Some gigs were paid once in a while. Usually, they were volunteer. And we did national parks, state parks. We worked at a nonprofit bird conservation organization in Texas. We worked at a private campground in Cape Cod. I even did a stint as a picker at an Amazon warehouse outside of Nashville for a Christmas season. Wherever we were, we can sell on eBay. Usually we were 3 to 4 months at our work camping location. And when that happened, we knew where we were shipping from. If you're someone who wants to move around a lot for this lifestyle, it's going to get a little bit harder to pin down that zip code.
Because if you're going to be in a place for, say, a couple of weeks and you change the zip code, it's only going to be good for the sales that you make during that period of time. And then before you leave the zip code, I'm assuming you have to go in and edit everything again. So it's going to be a new zip code. Do you know where you're heading? Do you know what the zip code is?
We tried to plan. So when we were leaving a place and heading to a new place, that was usually then everyone thought we were on vacation for all these years. Well, we weren't. And really, the vacation was between locations. That would be when we would travel and we'd say, okay, in a week's time, we know we're going to stop here. We had a booking maybe in a campground somewhere. So we would use that zip code. You can do that in bulk edits, you know, or in just change your shipping ship from address. So it's really easy to change it. Everything changes at once.
Yeah, you don't have to go in and edit each of the listings.
No.
You mentioned that you did a stint at Amazon during Christmas. Have you seen the movie Nomadland?
I did. Nomadland.
Nomadland, sorry.
Nomadland. I didn't see the movie, but I read the book. And I just want to point out for folks who did see that, and maybe that it's a little bit of a dismal picture, is that there's many different kinds of people who are living in their rig on the road. But that story really focused on people who are doing out of economic necessity rather than a lifestyle choice. When you go to a place and you're working, although I will say except for a big warehouse for a big company, that was tough. That was hard work. But it wasn't economic necessity. It was like, hey, I can work there for 6 weeks and make a ton of money and work a ton of hours, and then we're free for the next X number of months.
You've got me thinking.
It was fun. In the big picture, it was fun.
Well, you get to see the country.
Right. And working in the big warehouse, as a picker anyway, you have to be able to walk about 13 miles a day. Very, very fast.
So you kept in shape.
Yeah.
I could use 13 miles a day, trust me.
Yeah. And my feet hurt at the end of every day. But I survived.
And you seem very happy.
Very happy.
And so 3.5 years, how do you handle a return when you're on the road?
Well, that's actually easy. You have a friend or a relative or someone you even pay to get your mail and it gets shipped home. And so I had somebody that we had some complication, some other people that we were opening mail for. She would open up if there was a return. Maybe there were 3 returns in 3 years. She would open up the mail and she'd look it over and say, yeah, that looks good. That, you know, and I had her look at the listing on eBay. I would send it to her and she'd say, yep, that looks just like it. Okay, we're good.
So you didn't have to have things returned to you wherever you were going to be. You just had to ship back to the house.
That would be complicated. Yeah. And we didn't relist the item until I went back and I had it in hand again, because then I didn't want her to have to ship it out again.
Right. During this 3 years or 3.5 years, did you make trips back to Vermont or were you constantly away from the state?
Yeah, we did. So being in Vermont, it's kind of far from everywhere. We tended to go back about once a year to load up with new boxes of inventory and take things out of our storage area. So we did have to build that into our schedules. A couple of times, because Vermont is so far, we left our rig out west. We left it in the Midwest, and then we just drove the truck. It was less expensive. It was faster. And we would catch up with friends and relatives, too. So that was nice.
Wow. This lifestyle, was there anything about it that was definitely not a great thing, this 3.5 years of doing this?
No. So why aren't we doing it anymore, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask. So you settled back down. What happened?
So what happened was in 2020, we were coming back as a sort of summer gig. We were coming back to our hometown in Vermont because we opened a pop-up antique shop for 6 months. We took things out of storage. And we were doing it precisely then because our town had gone through a multi-year road construction project and it was just ended. So it was a big celebration year for the town. It just so happened it coincided with COVID. And so it was exactly the same time as COVID. So because of that, we had some new complications. We rented this space. We actually opened the store for the first time right on the heels of the retail lockdown being lifted. We took a chance. Once we settled in, and we were renting a house for 6 months, we got out of our rig. Once we settled down, housing prices were just increasing daily and inventory was decreasing daily. And yeah. I got a little nervous. We decided we better buy a house. It actually revealed the flaw in the plan, which I'm glad we didn't know it while we were on the road, which was we didn't have a place to go in an emergency. We didn't have a safe place. Our children are grown, have their own places. They're small. They didn't want us. Their pets don't get along with our pet. We couldn't go there. In the beginning months of COVID, everybody, you know, you're supposed to stay away from people with different types of conditions. Well, we're all old. Everyone we know had diabetes or asthma or these things. We were coming out of Florida. There wasn't lockdown. There weren't rules at the time when we first went north. And we said, we can't do that to people. We did find a friend who had an empty house for a couple months to move into. And we lived there until we were able to rent our house. But it made us think we don't have a place of our own.
So you got off the road at that point.
We got off the road and it's great. We like our store. Our eBay shop keeps growing right now. We have about 1,400 listings and we miss the road, but it will always be there.
So you kept your rig or did you get rid of it?
After about a year and a half, we sold it. Because we realized that if we go back on the road again, we may do it differently and we probably wouldn't live in it full time. We wouldn't need anything that big.
The call of the road is there, Janet.
It's always there.
Did you meet a lot of people on the road?
Oh, we met tons of people. First of all, work camping is a great way to meet people because you settle into a job and there's always other work campers and the people who live there and work there, wherever there is. So that's a great way to meet people. And after that, if you're just a few nights in a campground here or there, people are so friendly and people are great about it. I can remember when we first pulled into our first campground in Florida and we had never done this before. We bought it in Pennsylvania in the north. It was winterized. So we needed to pull in, de-winterize it and live there that night. We just pulled into a spot in a campground and some guy looked at us and must have seen how green we were and just walked right over from his campsite. Oh, do you need help? Why, yes, thank you. We do.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It kind of, again, reminds me of the movie Nomadland, where the main character meets a lot of people who are always very helpful. You didn't happen to run into Bill, remember from the book or the movie?
No, I didn't run into Bill, but I think we did meet a lot of Bills.
A lot of people like Bill. Mm-hmm. And if you've seen the movie or read the book, you know who we're talking about. He's kind of the king of nomads out there who were living off the road, so to speak. What about buying? Janet, did you find inventory while you were out on the road?
Yeah, you know, that was one of the benefits was finding new sourcing opportunities. It was fun. Some places were not, you know, we worked in the Grand Tetons in the middle of Wyoming for 4 months. That was not a place to find new things to sell.
Yeah.
But there were definitely places where we could go and source and it was fun.
So you would actually take in inventory while you were on the road.
Right.
when it was all over, did you do an accounting to figure out, were you able to kind of pay for the whole 3.5 years worth of experience by making sales?
Well, except for a couple of paid stints along the way, this was our sole source of supporting ourselves. We're not retired. We don't have Social Security. We had no other source of income. But I will mention that it's a very small financial footprint lifestyle. If you take out the equation of rent or mortgage and fuel costs and taxes and this kind of thing, you know, you're down to your food, your insurance, your costs to move around in your rig, and your phone.
How quickly could you ship out on an average for a transaction while you're on the road? You'd have to make a trip to a post office. Were you always close by to a post office?
Most of the time, most of the work camping places we were at, again, in the Tetons, I think we went twice a week because it was a bit of a trek. But usually we were in a town that, yeah, we were right there. We went every day.
Did any fellow travelers that you met along the way, were they curious about what you were doing with this buying and selling?
Everybody. Because we would be outside the rig taking photos, you know, that would be part of our day. And it was kind of fun staging things, you know, with cacti behind you, or with a mountain behind us or whatever. So yeah, people are like, what are you doing? You know, why are you taking pictures of this little trinket?
Did anyone catch the bug, you think?
Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's hard to say, yeah.
Hard to know.
Have you kept in touch with anyone that you've met on the road?
Absolutely. Almost every place that we went, we have at least one new friend from there. Absolutely.
If I'm considering doing this, I mean, I'm speaking for the devil. I'm not so sure I'm going to go out and travel the road at my age. But if I'm a person or a seller who's thinking about this, what would you say to that seller?
Okay, I do have some advice. The first thing I would say is decide what you want to drive. So what are you comfortable with? The size of your rig. Do you want a tow behind? Do you want a camper van, something small? Do you want a motorhome? Then you can see what fits for your inventory and your business supplies. That will help you decide what you're going to sell. And think outside the box. It doesn't have to be what you're selling now. If you're a seller, you can think, well, maybe I sell whatever, but I'm going to get into postcards because you can sell you can bring a lot of postcards with you, or jewelry, or small things like that, dollhouse things. You can really make those things happen with some smaller inventory. Another thing I think we talked about was your zip code. Always knowing, that's really important. I'm sure I tripped up once in a while. And what's interesting is if I had something set from a different zip code from where I find out I am after something is bought and paid for, I can go into the shipping label and change where I'm shipping from that day and probably eat some shipping expense.
Yeah.
Or maybe I charge too much and then I would send somebody back a little refund and maybe it would change a little bit the shipping time, but you can make those adjustments. I tried not to.
Right. Was your performance standard, you know, your performance metrics, were they ever in jeopardy from issues like this?
No, never.
Okay, so that's good to know. What else would you advise?
Well, my other advice is, I can't stress enough about, and this is for people who, not just people who are nomads, but keep your inventory organized. Have your spreadsheet. And in a tight space like an RV, you have even more hiding places where to put something. Oh, that's supposed to be a hamper? Well, I'm going to put a box of things down there or whatever. Know where everything is. It's doable with a good system, but you may be digging around a lot. My husband is the shipping department. Oftentimes, he had totes stacked 2 or 3 deep way back in the truck that I sold something from that one down at the bottom way in the back. He was moving things around all the time.
This was very recent that you made this trip. Were you to make it again, would you do anything differently besides taking your own advice and making sure everything's organized in the zip code and what you're going to drive?
Right.
Is there something else you would have done differently?
Oh, that's a good question. I can't really think of it. If I was going to repeat what we did, I think we did it pretty well. We had some kind of a plan on how we were going to do it. It would be a lot harder now because we have so many listings. We have almost 1,400. We'd have to call things down and say, all right, figure out which of those we're going to take. But We loved it. We had such a great experience. It's a beautiful country, and it was a wonderful way to see the country and experience different places, not just drive through them and spend two nights. But really, what is it like to live in Wyoming? What is it like to live in Oregon or in Texas? It was great.
Was there a particular place in the United States besides Vermont, which we all know is paradise and the best state in the world?
Of course.
We agree on that. Was there another place in the United States that you were surprised about how much you liked, or was it be a place that you would actually consider living? What was your favorite place?
Well, I can't say I had a favorite. The Grand Tetons were the most beautiful. We loved Cape Cod. We worked at a private campground there for 4 months, and we absolutely loved it. We were about a mile from the ocean, so we weren't on it, but we were also only a mile from the bay, so we were right in between. It was great.
What town were you in?
East Ham.
Oh, yeah. No, East Ham. It's lovely. Great old town. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful town. And they had a very nice post office.
This must have been in the summer, though, right? Because the Cape is a little difficult in the winter.
Yes. We only were north. We were in Oregon and Wyoming and Cape Cod in the summers. And the winters we did in Arizona, in Texas. And we were two different stints in Florida state parks. Two different locations at two different times.
That makes sense in the planning. You don't want a winter in the north. You want a winter in the south. And then the summers are easier the farther north you go.
Right. And that's why once we got our rig out to Wyoming at first, it stayed out there for a couple of years, even though we came east a couple times.
I see. Yeah. One of the things I thought, if you're considering doing this, a way that you can potentially make it pay is to keep a video log on YouTube and get subscribers. And if you get enough of them, you can monetize that. And it becomes a way of documenting your trip. And a lot of people do this now. But I think it takes a certain mindset and a personality who doesn't mind exposing their life on the road to the rest of the world. I don't know if that's something you would consider if you were to do this again, but it's another possible way to monetize and pay for the trip.
Correct.
Would you do that? Or is that something
No.
you can do? No question, she says. Not going to do it. I got to be honest, I wouldn't either. I would never do it, but some people are comfortable with that. I just never would do it myself.
Right.
Janet, I hope to make a trip to Vermont. I'd love to meet you face to face. Janet sent me a picture of the outside of her store, and I used to live right next to the town that she lives in. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's an antique shop? That used to be an Aubuchon hardware store. And it isn't anymore. It's your location. That's a big space.
It's a big space. Yeah, we have over 3,000 square feet of retail space.
So if you're in Vermont on Route 7 and you go through the town of Brandon, make sure you stop and meet Janet and her husband and see all of those antiques. I know she gets stuff because one of our mutual acquaintances bought something while she was talking to me. And I looked at it. I got a picture of it and I said, yeah, I would have bought that. Janet, it's a real pleasure, and thank you for sharing your experience and advice about traveling on the road. And should you consider doing it again, please let us know. We'd love to check in.
Very good. Thank you.
And what is your user ID on eBay?
Vermont Eye Candy. Spell out Vermont Eye Candy.
So that's an easy one, Vermont Eye Candy. We'll put a link in our transcript for this episode so that you can visit her store directly. And check it out, because 1,400 listings, you're bound to find something. A lot of it's probably from Vermont.
Absolutely.
Janet, thanks so much.
Thank you, Griff.
Janet Mondlach, with her husband, has a business on eBay, as she says, Vermont Eye Candy. Please check it out. And we'll put a link to her store in the transcript for this episode.
You got questions?
We've got answers. And Brian, our first question this week was emailed to podcast@ebay.com by a seller named Leo, and I was thinking maybe you'd like to read this first one.
I'm always happy to oblige, Griff. You know that. I'd love to. Leo wrote, my initial eBay listing under my name Lee Loving is a U.S. auction listing only and is midway through the 10-day process. If possible, how can I revise the listing to include certain foreign countries? Thank you, Leo.
Good question.
So, Leo, if you search on revise and help, you'll find some information on what is and isn't revisable for an auction listing. It depends on if there are bids and how much time is left in the auction.
That's true. And, you know, I checked that page as well. And I have to admit, it's not absolutely clear if you can change the ship to locations for an auction listings once bids have been made. if you visit the page, you'll see there is an indication you can change ship to locations, but it's not repeated under the bids made sections. But I suspect it is okay. It is allowable since adding ship to locations really doesn't change the terms of the listing for any existing bidders at all.
I think you're probably right. Leo, we suggest you try to add more locations, like international locations, by going directly to the listing and clicking on the revise link. Then scroll down to the shipping options and make changes to include international shipping. It should work. If not, let us know.
And Leo, we've asked the team that manages the help page to make it clearer on the page when and if changing ship to locations is available for auction listings with or without bids and before or after the 12-hour deadline for other changes. Hopefully they'll clarify that.
Great. Well, our next question was sent by eBay seller Terry, who writes, "A minor annoyance in the greater scheme of things, but this just happened to me for the third time in the last couple weeks. I entered the UPC code for a VHS movie I wanted to list, and eBay automatically populated a lot of the listing info, including the title of the movie. I entered what eBay hadn't, hit list, figuring I was good to go on the listing, but no. I got this message, movie/TV, title's value of Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, version 1, Hercules and the Amazon Woman, is too long. Enter a value of no more than 65 characters. Like I said, this isn't a one-off. It's happened before. Why would eBay autofill a title that it would later ask me to edit for length? Thanks for listening, Terry." I'm going to let you answer this one, Griff.
Okay, because I actually tested it out. Up front, I tried to duplicate what Terry saw by listing the same title using the same steps that he did. And I couldn't duplicate what he saw. That is, when I did this, the title for this identical VHS tape, when I listed it and used the catalog, it was truncated automatically to 80 spaces. But perhaps that doesn't always happen. So for those instances, I'll explain how it works. Most of the entries in the eBay product catalog were obtained from a third-party service, and those entries will often contain the full title of the item. And it will often exceed the character limit of 80 spaces for an eBay title. Terry said the error message said 65 characters, and that used to be the case, but it was in the last couple of years that was increased to 80, so that text for the alert might need to be updated. Anyway, when this happens, the seller should simply reduce the character count in the title, starting with removing all the punctuation, and if that's not enough to stay under the 80 character limit, then that seller should remove any extraneous words. And this title, if you view it, has hyphens and periods and those could go. Keep in mind that the item will still show up in searches for the title if the buyer uses the entire title as shown in the catalog, since the key data points are based on the UPC code, which will return all results that match the item, regardless of how you truncate the title, even if some keywords or punctuation has been omitted by the seller in their title. So that's how you get around that.
But the Hercules, The Legendary Journeys V1, maybe it said version 1.
No, that's exactly what the title is.
Oh, but that's not even 65 characters.
Well, there's extra spaces. Anyway, it didn't work.
Well, you couldn't replicate it.
No. When I did it, the title was truncated automatically, and there was no warning about the title being too long. And I used the same UPC code to list it.
I really don't want to say this word, but I'm going to. Maybe it was just a little glitch and then went away.
Okay, but he says it's happened 3 times.
Oh, that's right. He did say that it's happened. The only thing that I would say is, to Terry, if it happens again, capture like all the information, like the item number and all of that, and maybe we can have someone take a closer look into it.
I think there's a link on the page where you can send that information directly to that team.
There is.
Don't send it to us.
One other thing, Griff. The majority of titles in the catalog have titles that are within the 80 character limit, so most people aren't going to run into this. For those that are not, like the one that Terry ran into, and the system for whatever reason doesn't reduce the characters to 80, the seller will have to edit the title in order to list it.
Yeah, and again, just take out as many characters as you can, especially starting with anything that's extraneous, like hyphens and quotation marks and periods and... Now, our next question was posted on our Facebook group. We have a Facebook group. It's called the eBay for Business Facebook group. It's separate from the eBay for Business Facebook page. you should join it if you're not on there. There's lots of fun things that get posted there. People ask questions and other people answer them, and it's really fun. But anyway, this was in the group by eBay seller Kim, and she says, a question regarding my eBay homepage. So if you go to my eBay, it looks like a homepage, the first page you get to. She says, I do not want all these stupid offers at the top. I watch things for one day or while I'm listing them, and then I remove them from my watch list. But they stay there, those offers, stay at the top forever. Can I move offers to the bottom of the page somehow? It's terrible. If I'm not watching the item any longer, why can't I clear the listing of annoying offers too? I don't want offers from sellers that have to be on the top, taking all that space. Is there something logical that I'm missing? Signed, Kim.
Well, Kim.
Yes.
Currently, there's no option for sorting the sections on the My eBay page, but you can delete all of the offers, active and expired.
Yeah. I know I do this myself on a regular basis. Those offers are always going to show up on top there, but you can delete expired offers right off that page. Using the delete function, you can checkbox all the ones that are expired and then delete them. Now, for the ones that are currently active that you're no longer interested in, you can still delete those, but you have to open each one and then decline the offer. And once you've declined it, it disappears.
And Kim, you can always click the link for Tell Us What You Think to make suggestions to the product team in charge of that page for making the sections sortable. Our next question was posted on our Facebook group by seller Christina. Hi. I host eBay events for sellers. Someone in my group is retired from the post office. She ran across a seller she wanted to purchase from, and all that seller's listing shows shipping via media mail, and none of them qualify for it. My question is, how is that seller able to use only media mail in our listings, even if it's in a category that does not support media mail? Also, is there a way to report that seller? Is she trying to avoid final value fees? So I'm pretty sure that when the seller is at the print postage stage and the seller tries to select media mail as an option for an item that is not eligible for media mail, the postage option for media mail will not be available.
Yeah, that's correct. So even though that seller has added media mail to listings that are not eligible for media mail, when that seller goes to buy postage on eBay, they're not going to be able to. Now, someone pointed out, yeah, but they could take the same information and go to a third-party postage site like stamps.com. or Shippo, they cannot connect it to an eBay listing and easily print out the media mail. To her question about why is the seller doing this, I don't think it's that they're trying to avoid final value fees. I think they're trying to offer the cheapest shipping, which media mail is, and they're not paying attention, or worse, they are, and they're just doing it anyway, that media mail is only meant for very specific media items. And when it comes time to printing out postage, this seller is still going to have to, if they do it on eBay, they're still going to have to use a more expensive option because media mail won't show up as a postage option. It'll be grayed out. Now, I know this because I tested it, and other sellers probably have seen this happen. The ideal situation would be that media mail would not be available for any item that's not eligible for media mail at the point of listing. But the current design of shipping policies leaves this loophole. So at the point where a seller selects a postage option during the listing, they can add a policy that includes media mail.
And of course, it goes without saying that an honest seller would never attempt to misuse the media mail option for ineligible items because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And is the risk of running afoul of USPS rules.
Oh, yeah. And I checked, and according to the USPS website, they quote, media mail packages are subject to inspection by the Postal Service. And upon such inspection, matter not eligible for media mail rate may be assessed at the proper rate and sent to the recipient postage with postage due, or the sender may be contacted for additional postage. Don't use the media mail option for items that are not eligible for media mail unless you really don't mind ending up with a very unhappy buyer.
And if you want to continue to avoid unhappy buyers, or if you've got a question about selling on eBay, why not call us on 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630, and you can call at any time of the day at your convenience, and you can leave your question on our voice line and indicate also if you would like us to call you so you can come live on the show.
If you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And now it's time for your three-point weekly podcast checklist.
Check the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements for up-to-date seller news every day.
Are you still not using eBay business policies this late into the game? If you're not, you're missing out on efficiency. For the same reason you're missing out if you're not using a thermal printer. So you should try them all and see how it improves your business.
Clearly, we have different definitions of change. Need to review anything in this episode? It's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links we reference during the episode.
And speaking of shipping, on our next episode, we'll welcome back Senior Director of Shipping, Stuart Reichenbach. And he's going to join us to talk about all things shipping for the upcoming holiday season and go into greater detail about some of the new changes like to eBay Standard Envelope. And Brian and I are going to share tips on how to help you reduce the incidence of pesky returns.
We'd like to again thank our guest this week, Janet Monblack.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.